Today, housing affordability stinks. Hello again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Welcome to this post covering finance and broad news with a distinctively Australian flavour. Yesterday, I mentioned the HIA report on housing affordability, and they said housing in Australia became less affordable in the December 2020 quarter due to rising house prices and a slight fall in average incomes. Sydney continues to be the most unaffordable market with an index reading of 66.4 in December, and Melbourne was also considered extremely unaffordable at a level of 77.5. But today, I wanted to take that discussion further by looking at the latest Demographia report just out and also explore why this is happening. Historically, housing affordability has been similar between nations until a few decades ago. For example, national price-to-income ratios were around 3 or less in Australia, Canada, Ireland, New Zealand, the United Kingdom, and the United States until the late 1980s or 1990s. However, since that time, housing affordability has deteriorated significantly, and by 2019, national median multiples had increased to 4 in the United States and Canada, nearly 6 in Australia, and 7 in New Zealand. Now, all these findings are contained in the latest Urban Reform Institute and the Frontier Centre for Public Policy report in the 2021 edition of the Demographia International Housing Affordability Report. This report provides housing affordability ratings using what's called the median multiple, which is a measurement of income in relation to housing prices across 92 major metropolitan areas in 8 nations to the third quarter of 2020. They rate middle-income housing affordability in markets with more than 1 million of population. And that includes Australia, Canada, China, Hong Kong only, Ireland, New Zealand, Singapore, United Kingdom and the United States. The 2021 edition rates housing affordability to the third quarter of 2020, September of course, and most of the international housing affordability evaluations are at a national level, but they also look at the major housing market levels within nations because differences between housing markets in a country can be very substantial. Now, a housing market is defined by the ability of residents to reach employment by daily commutes. Generally, this can be defined as a maximum of 60 minutes one-way commute time, while average work trip times tend to be around 30 minutes in most areas. Housing markets are also therefore labour markets, which are also called metropolitan areas, and in a well-functioning market, middle-income households should be able to afford the median-priced house, they say. Thus, affordability measured at the housing market level is different than housing affordability in a neighbourhood or part of the housing market. Even if housing is unaffordable in part of the housing market, there should still be enough housing stock affordable enough to meet the demands of middle-income households. Housing affordability comparisons can be made between housing markets, such as a comparison between Adelaide and Melbourne, or over time within the same housing market, for example, comparing years in Adelaide. In this year of the global pandemic and lockdowns, they say, it's not surprising that housing affordability, given the large influx of new buyers, particularly in suburban and outlying areas, has continued to deteriorate. As a result, many low-income and middle-income households who already have suffered the worst consequence from housing inflation will see their standards of living further decline. The affordability issue is particularly critical due to the strong increase in remote working, teleworking, during the pandemic, which is accelerating the movement to more affordable places. And it will likely also help flatten or even reduce prices in the highest cost housing markets as the households seek less costly housing elsewhere. Now, the Demographia International Housing Affordability uses the median multiple to rate middle-income household affordability. The median multiple is a price debt-to-income ratio of the median house price divided by the gross median household income. Price-to-income ratios have been widely used, such as by the World Bank, the United Nations, the Organization for International Cooperation and Development, the Joint Center for Housing Studies at Harvard University, and others. Housing affordability measures that use median house prices and incomes are used particularly to measure middle-income housing affordability. This is done in part by measuring middle of the income and house price distributions, which excludes the influence of high-income and luxury housing. Middle-income housing affordability is rated in four categories, ranging from the most affordable to the least affordable, which is called severely unaffordable. And housing affordability has deteriorated materially in recent decades, which has been a principal factor in an internationally observed reduction in middle-income standards of living. Now, the data summarises the housing market by housing affordability rated by nations, and we can also look across the more detailed data too. Only four markets are rated affordable, with median multiples of three or less, and that includes Pittsburgh, Rochester, Buffalo and St. Louis, all in the US. At the other end of the scale, there are 36 severely unaffordable major housing markets. The least affordable is Hong Kong at 20.7, Vancouver at 13, Sydney at 11.8, Auckland at 10, Toronto at 9.9, Melbourne at 9.7, San Jose at 9.6, San Francisco at 9.6, Honolulu at 9.1, London at 8.6, and San Diego at 8. The last year has involved material setbacks, mostly due to the impact of the pandemic, they say, which has led to a home buying boom in some areas while suppressing incomes. Housing affordability deteriorated by more than 1.0 median multiple points in just a year, the equivalent of 1 year's pre-tax median income in Vancouver, San Francisco and Honolulu, with the greatest deterioration in Auckland at 1.4 points and Toronto at 1.3 points. The deterioration was from 0.5 to 1 6 months of household incomes in Sydney and San Diego. Virtually all the markets with severely unaffordable housing have urban containment policies, they say, that severely restrict building on the periphery. And the number of housing markets that have become severely unaffordable in the United States and Canada has grown steadily since 2004. Housing affordability deteriorated the equivalent of 6 years of annual household incomes in Toronto, between 2 and 3 years in Montreal, Portland and Ottawa, and 1.5 to 2 points in Seattle and Denver. By 2004, all of the major markets in Australia and New Zealand had become severely unaffordable. As to why we're seeing this tide of unaffordability, the largest housing affordability differences between major metropolitan areas arose as significant restrictions on urban fringe housing development were applied, they said. These measures are called urban containment and include growth management and compact city policies. A principal purpose of urban containment is to curb the physical expansion of urban areas, that is, conversion of rural land to urban land, or what some refer to as urban sprawl. Unfortunately, this can be to the detriment of middle-income households. Urban containment's prototypical strategy is urban growth boundaries encircling urban areas, they said. Urban containment can render it impossible to profitably build tracts of housing affordable to middle-income households due to much higher land prices. According to urban planning literature, urban development is steered to the area inside the line and discouraged, if not prevented, outside it. Urban containment is contrasted with traditional approaches to land use regulation by the presence of policies that are explicitly designed to limit the development of land outside the defined urban area. Harvard University's William Alonso shows that the value of land tends to rise from the low agricultural values outside the built-up urban area to the centre. Normally, without urban containment, land values tend to rise gradually as distance increases from the centre. But with urban containment, it is expected that there will be abrupt land value increases, such as at urban growth boundaries, and land values and house prices tend to be higher throughout the entire area of urban containment. In other words, they regard planning restrictions as the prime reason for housing unaffordability. But that said, in a recent conversation piece called Zoning Isn't to Blame for Australia's Soaring House Prices, this article argues that among the many explanations put forward for soaring home prices, one we hear repeatedly is zoning, the regulations that govern the purpose for which land can be used, including how densely people can be housed in different locations. The real estate industry says if only we relaxed the zoning rules and allowed more houses and apartments to be built on each block, housing would be cheaper, maybe $355,000 per unit cheaper, if the Reserve Bank is right. And it's a story as grounded in simplicity as it is on the part of developers in self-interest, they said. The simple story is that zoning restrictions restrict development. Restricted development means restricted supply of houses and apartments, and restricted supply means higher prices. Scrap the planning laws, the argument goes, and property developers will shower the market with housing, driving down prices. So effective is the mantra. It has become part of the official story in Britain and the US and even in Australia. But what is missing, they said, is the evidence. Studies that point the finger at the planning system almost universally fail to quantify the extent of housing permitted by planning regulations and how it has changed over time. Rarely have changes in zones been examined, they said. But analysis by Australia's Reserve Bank, for example, treats zone rules as though they exist in stasis, as ever-present yet spatially varied regulation measured by whatever price remains once structure and land values are subtracted. But their new research fills the gap by measuring changes in zoning at the level of individual properties in Greater Brisbane. They examined 20 years of changes to zoning, housing supply and prices across more than 25,000 sites in 19 major centres, subject to repeated zoning changes designed to encourage urban infill. The centres had within them a wide variety of land use types, detached dwellings, medium density dwellings, commercial and retail use, etc., and housing densities. And they reviewed and mapped historic and current rules to determine how the zoned capacity changed on each site. And they combined this with data on the changes in land use on each site, changes to the actual supply of dwellings and property prices. If the semi-official story was true, they would have expected increases in zoned capacity to lead to falling prices. But their results show no such thing. Locations with increased zone capacity for housing saw increased, not reduced, property prices. Across the selected sites, houses increased in value by a factor of 3 and apartments by 2.3 over the 2 decades studied, as they did elsewhere in Australia. It's all about weaker zoning, not weaker prices, they said. During this time, the zoned capacity of housing in these locations doubled, but there was no rush to take up the increase in capacity. Developers hold off, actually, until prices are right. The vast majority of sites, actually 94%, were not developed within 5 years of the zoning changes. Even after 20 years, 71% of the extra capacity remained unexploited, and they found evidence of an alternative story that planning regulations permit development, but it is the market price that determines if and when development occurs. So higher sale prices make development more feasible. Now, under this story, developers select their sites, build and sell in strong markets, and wait or avoid selling when markets are weak. This partly explains why locations with highest initial property prices are the most likely to be developed. Like all good stories, the semi-official one contains an element of truth, they said. If the planning system failed to allow for enough growth, it would almost certainly drive up prices. But rarely is supply a problem. And to avoid this, planning authorities go to great lengths to ensure there is enough zone capacity to cater for projected growth. This is, they say, one reason why we don't have a housing supply problem. Deregulating the planning system won't change that, but nor will it ease price pressure. What it will do is reduce the environmental and other benefits zoning provides, while continuing to allow developers to sell properties at times of their choosing. What is driving up house prices now has little to do with zoning And it is happening worldwide. Throughout the globe, they say, we've seen increases in easy access to cheap credit and tax regimes that encourages speculative property investment. Unlike planning regulations, which vary hugely by location, these macroeconomic factors are common, and they help explain why the housing affordability crisis transcends national boundaries. It is the liberalisation of finance and the treatment of housing as an investment product, they say, that got us into this mess. And further liberalisation of planning regulations is, they say, unlikely to get us out. And certainly my own research correlates very strongly availability of credit with house price growth and affordability. And frankly, I do think that it's the financialization of property that is really to blame for this massive issue that we've got with housing affordability. And of course, solutions which are being offered by government include incentives to try and get people into the property market, but that just lifts prices further. Reducing lending standards, which of course increases credit, or other initiatives to try and keep the Ponzi scheme going just a bit further. But at some point, it seems to me that lending will run out of smoke because you can't go on cutting rates indefinitely. And housing affordability is a multiplier income. And of course, at the moment, those income multiples are very high. So at some point, the growth trajectory is likely to slow, but it's probably not going to happen that quickly because, of course, everybody is talking up the market and blaming planning as being the cause of housing unaffordability. Look over here, not over there. I'm Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Many thanks for watching, and I'll see you again next time.